Our Pilgrim Journey.
The word pilgrim has a lot of meaning in it. It suggests a temporary traveling period. It means that mentally we do well to look at ourselves from the viewpoint that we are on our way. We're progressing toward a goal. Not like the rest of the world, who are quite at home with earthly surroundings. We are, as the hymn says, traveling to this heavenly city to which our Lord is the light of it. The lesson, the bottom line is for us, emotionally and spiritually, not to become too much at home with our surroundings, because they're temporary. And that's what a tent or a tabernacle or a pilgrimage journey implies, that it is not a permanent home, but it is a means to an end. Now, the scriptures, we're going to mainly be talking about the 84th Psalm, which is what we call, what the scriptures refer to as a pilgrimage psalm. But first, we want to have a few thoughts before that. Peter tells us in 1 Peter 2:11, he says, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts, which war against the soul." Phillips renders that text, "I beg you, as those whom I love, who live in this world, as strangers and temporary residents, to keep clear of the desires of your lower nature, for they are always at war with your soul." Peter is telling us, consider yourself a pilgrim. You're on a trip. Don't get yourself too comfortable with earth's possessions, earth's wealth, earthly conditions, because as someone said, we don't own anything in this world. We just rent. When the Lord says your lease is up, you go on. And that is true of everyone in the world as well as ourselves, that when the Lord says it is time, we answer the call. Paul tells us, in other words, he says, 2 Corinthians 5:6, "Therefore we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord." So the pilgrim mentality is very important. Now, there's a classical book by John Bunyan called Pilgrim's Progress. In it, he tells of a Christian who is a pilgrim, who is journeying to a city, a celestial city. And he parallels many of the concepts that we find in the scriptures. It's a classic in literature. He wrote this book while he was in prison. He was a minister who was persecuted for his religious beliefs. And he wrote this book while he was in prison. He was in prison 13 years. He speaks of many, many metaphorical, allegorical pictures and personages, and he speaks to them of many conditions that we run up against in our daily Christian lives, but under different names. He speaks of falling into the slough of despond. The scriptures tell us that the adversary is very anxious to discourage us and to get us into this a depressed state so that we cannot do our utmost in serving the Lord. All of us at times visit this slough of despond, of discouragement, despair, depression. And we have to realize that this is part of the pilgrim journey, that if we're going to get to the heavenly city, we've got to pass certain experiences. These are growing, learning experiences which we must receive lessons from if we are to eventually have the well done, good and faithful servant. Now, Paul, who was so eloquent and so self-possessed, visited the slough of despond. In 2 Corinthians 1:8, from the Amplified reading, he says, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about the affliction and oppressing distress which befell us in the province of Asia. How we were so utterly and unbearably weighed down and crushed, that we despaired even of life itself. So if Paul met this condition and was able to see the Lord's leading in it and through it, so we who have lesser experiences must also seek the Lord's answer of how to cope with this slough of despond, which we all must go into from time to time. He talks, Bunyan refers to bypass meadow. There were bypasses which this Christian was urged to take instead of going on the straight way. And so you and I have many detours in life which we consider that are taking us out of the way. But it is the Lord's shortest way for us. When we feel we have a detour, it is God's shortest way for us to get to the destination that He wants us to go to. There's no mistaking about it. The Lord has wonderful maps. He never misguides us. And so if we are going through an experience or a trial, or an inconvenience, let us remember that His providence arranged itself. He could have changed it. And so we're told to watch out for a bypass meadow. Also, this Christian in Pilgrim's Progress went past the Doubting Castle, where the giant despair lives. The adversary's insidious tool of doubt and discouragement will try to deflect us as pilgrims from what is our basic goal, the doing of God's will, and being a part, an instrument of His in the rehabilitation of the world, if faithful. He speaks of going to Vanity Fair, of meeting Mr. Worldly Wise Man. We've all met Mr. Worldly Wise Man who counsels us how wrong we are in our course that we have chosen, that we should do things the world's way. Our Lord had to correct Peter when Peter was taking the part of a Mr. Worldly Wise Man. When Jesus said He was going to go to Jerusalem, Peter said, "That's not a good idea. I suggest you don't do it." And Jesus said to Peter, "Peter," in the Amplified, "you stand in my way, Peter, when you look at things from man's viewpoint and not from God's viewpoint." And so we must always fine-tune God's will from what we are receiving from the world, because they do not look at it of God's viewpoint, only Mr. Worldly Wiseman's viewpoint. There's Mr. Pliable, Mr. Valiant for Truth, Mr. Fearing. Well, it's an interesting book, and we can learn many lessons from it. But going on now to the Scriptures, pilgrimages are very important in the Scriptures. We are told in Deuteronomy 16:16 that three times in a year shall all thy male appear before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, that's Passover and Unleavened Bread, in the Feast of Weeks, which is Pentecost, and in the Feast of Tabernacles, which was in the fall, starting on the 15th of the seventh month. And there are about 12 or 14 psalms that the Jewish people, the Israelites, used to sing and chant. Some of them were antiphonal. In other words, the leader would read part of it, and the rest of the audience would answer the choruses. Because in Israel in those days, it was very difficult to go up to Jerusalem, which was a very high spot in Israel. And there were many desolate areas and dry, waterless areas, and valleys. And so these hymns which they sung encouraged them on. Most of the psalms of pilgrimage are from Psalms 121 to 134. Psalms 121, for instance, as you can picture now, these pilgrims, and you and I are pilgrims. In an average town anywhere along the country of Israel, people from the same town would gather together and go to Jerusalem. And they would go up together, and they would be singing these hymns. If you ever go into a convention where there's a large group of people in a car, and you sing hymns, and you give testimonies and or on a bus. I'm reminded of the Dawn bus sometimes going to a convention. They'll just cheer themselves on as they're going. And in the New Testament, one very prominent example of a pilgrimage festival and the journey that got them to Jerusalem was when Jesus was 12 years old. There, you will remember that all the family, his mother, father, and members of the family, the kinsmen and the townspeople, they were all going to Jerusalem and in a caravan. And if you remember that when he was 12 years old, and on the way back, he was so delighted with his father's house that he lingered in his father's presence in the temple. And his parents had to come back and to look for him. They were troubled, as a parent would be. But it was one of these pilgrimage festivals that was obligatory for the males to attend three times a year that Jesus was on this occasion. Just a sample of a few of the thoughts that these pilgrims would sing as they went. The 121st Psalm, for instance, as they were a long way from Jerusalem, they would sing, "I will lift mine eyes unto the hills, from whence cometh my strength. My help cometh from the Lord, which hath made heaven and earth." They were so happy to be in the presence of Jehovah at the temple during these three festivals, holy festivals. And so they would anticipate by singing these hymns. Again, the 122nd Psalm says, "I was glad when they said unto me, Let us go up unto the house of the Lord. Our feet are standing within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Thou art built as a city that is compacted together. Whither the tribes went up, even the tribes of the Lord, as a testimony unto Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord." These are the thoughts that fill their hearts and minds. They were being anticipating the blessings of being at these festivals. The 42nd Psalm is a pathetic lament by one, either far away or in exile, whose delight had been to participate in the temple service, but was now prevented from doing so. There we read the familiar psalm, "As the hart panteth after the water brook, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before thee?" That phrase, "appear before thee," is a phrase that is used in connection with these three festivals. You must appear before the Lord three times each year. "When shall I come and appear before thee?" They go, "My tears have been my meat day and night, while they continually say unto me, Where is thy God? When I remember these things, I pour out my soul in me, for I had gone with a multitude." He had gone on previous occasions. "I went with them to the house of the Lord with the voice of joy and praise, with a multitude that kept holy day." And this psalm was one of unanticipated blessing because he was being denied this privilege which he had enjoyed in the past. Now, we'd like to get some lessons from the 84th Psalm, which is one of the finest of the pilgrimage psalms. First, just one point before we get into it. In the sixth verse, as we say, the psalmist here on the 84th Psalm is with a group attending the festival as a pilgrim at Jerusalem. Now, it could have been any one of the three, but there is a hint in the sixth verse. It's not found in King James, but most of the other translations have it, such as Amplified, Rotherham, Revised Version, Hurt, and others. The verse 6 says, "Who passing through the valley of Baca, make it a well, the rain also filled the pool," it says King James, but the other translations say, "The early rains clothed it with blessing." The early rains came in the fall, so it was not the two spring festivals, which was Passover and Pentecost, but it was the fall festival that the author of this psalm is speaking of when he was going up to Jerusalem. It was the Feast of Tabernacles. As we said, this was in the seventh month, on the 15th day for a week. Now, the seventh month was a very important day for Israel. On the first, you had New Year's Day, Rosh Hashanah, and on the 10th day, you had the Atonement Day, and on the 15th day was Feast of Tabernacles, or In-Gathering. It was a harvest festival, and it was in the fall of the year. Now, when the Israelites, for this festival, came to Jerusalem, the word tabernacle, Feast of Tabernacles, comes in that they were asked to make tents in the city and to spend time in these tents. They came from all over Israel to Jerusalem, and they made tents everywhere, on the Temple Mount, in the city, on top of the flat roofs, everywhere they could. They were to make tents, and this was to remind them, and this is a very valuable lesson for you and for me, Feast of Tabernacles. That it was a flashback to the pilgrimage journey of the 40 years, that they were newly released from slavery. They were emancipated, and they were pilgrims for those years on their way to the Promised Land. And for all the next 1,000 years of their history, the Lord wanted them to memorialize the fact that once they got to their permanent homes now, don't forget the time when you were pilgrims in the land, depending upon the Lord Jehovah for your providences. So this 84th Psalm then deals with the Feast of Tabernacles, which they were going to. The Feast of Tabernacles was a very special feast because it was Thanksgiving. You know, Thanksgiving is just around the corner. And I think it's well that we relate the two of these thoughts, that their Feast of Tabernacles was a Thanksgiving festival, a harvest festival, for thanking the Lord for the ingathering of the crops that they had been blessed with that year. And Brother Russell mentions in one of the articles that our Thanksgiving Day in this country is based somewhat upon that example of a fall harvest festival of Thanksgiving, to thank God. And as we know, as we remember our American heritage, that our forefathers who came here for religious freedom had a very difficult time in the world, and at the end of the first harvest, it is reported that they gathered together to thank God. In those days, it was okay to thank God. Now you can't have prayers in school, you can't mix religion. In those days, it was fine, because they were running for their lives from a tyranny and oppression from Europe. But thankfully, the Thanksgiving ceremony has continued all these years. And as we celebrate it in a few days from now, let us relate it to the Feast of Tabernacles, which is also a Thanksgiving ceremony. One of the main features of their Feast of Tabernacles was, as found in Deuteronomy 31:10, the reading of the law. And so with all of our thanksgiving for the good things of life, let us not remember that our primary thanks are for the law of God, which is within our hearts, and His truth, which has reached our ears. This is our thanksgiving. Let's go on to the 84th Psalm. It reads, "How amiable are thy tabernacles." Remember now, a large group of Israelites marching from far away to go to Jerusalem, and they were getting psyched up anticipating the blessings of this festival, and someone composed this psalm, and it was used thereafter each year. "How amiable are thy tabernacles, O Lord of hosts." He was on his way to the Lord's tabernacle, which was the temple. "My soul longeth, yea, even fainteth, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God." You can feel the feeling that these pilgrims had. This was not any duty that they had to do. This was something that their hearts were intent on, of appearing before God and receiving the inspiration for the year ahead. Very interesting third verse. It says, "Yes, the sparrow hath found an house, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young." So also, the better translations are, "So also have I found thine altars, O Lord of hosts, my God and my King." Anyone who's been to Israel and has been on the Temple Mount can sense the excitement of a pilgrim as he, after his long trip to Jerusalem, would find the Temple Mount. And as he did, this pilgrim spotted, which on the acres of the Temple Mount area, there are trees and buildings and, of course, temple, Solomon's Temple, in some cases, the Zerubbabel temples, in other cases. But he spotted birds flying peacefully up in this Temple Mount. And he thought these are such spiritual birds. They have found their home and built their nest right on the sacred precincts. And he said in his heart, I too have found a nest or a home, because there is no home. I haven't left my home in Nazareth or Capernaum or Bethlehem or from wherever. My home is here in Jerusalem, because this is where God's home is. This is where God's name is. And this is where we worship. We come not for the festival, but to see Jehovah who dwells between the cherubim. That's how sacred it was to them. And so he affectionately sees that even the birds have made their nest there, and so should the people of God. He goes on, blessed are they that dwell in thy house. They will be still praising thee. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of them. Then we want to talk about the sixth verse. Who passing through the valley of Baca, make it a well. The rains also, that is the early rains, also filleth the pool. The passing the valley of Baca is a very interesting phrase. The word Baca, according to some of the Jewish commentators, means balsam trees, which thrive in very dry places. There are some other, it's a little bit obscure, there's another word, baka in the Hebrew, which also means weeping. And some translators say, who pass through the valley of weeping, make it a well or a spring. And so the psalmist says, who passing through the valley of Baca, make it a place of watered area, springs or wells. Are we a balsam tree or a weeping willow tree? A balsam tree can survive on extremely little water in a dry climate. And there were such valleys which the psalmist doubtlessly passed through on his way through Jerusalem, and it was not a place of wealth. It was a very dry, waterless, thirsty land. But they make it a place of springs. They make it a place of springs. Can we survive and thank the Lord for very little? Or do we need lots of waters of blessing before we can praise the Lord? And even then, be sorry and weep as a weeping willow tree for the fact that it could be better even. We have to learn to survive not only with the Lord's blessing, but in spite of the removal of some of these blessings. Just to illustrate this, in the Christian journey, as we go through life, we have many trials, which correspond to the Valley of Baca. And the key word is, they make it something that it isn't. They label it, and therefore they are motivated to make it something which will motivate them to doing God's will far more acceptably. King James says, James 1, 2, and 3, in the King James Version says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptations. Trials are not joyous. But notice what he says. Count it. Make it an occasion of satisfaction at the Lord's providence, and not murmur and complain about it. Phillips renders that translation, those verses, again, going through this valley now. When all kinds of trials crowd into your life, my brethren, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. Realize that they come to test you and to produce in you the quality of endurance. New English Bible, the same text says, count yourselves supremely happy in the knowledge when such testing of your faith breeds fortitude. And if you give fortitude full play, you will go on to complete a balanced character. That's what it is, that we wring out of the trials. The fact that they will develop in us patience and character which will please the Lord. Not that we are enjoying the trials, by all means, no. One brother, I think it was Brother David Bruce in his talk a few years back, said, when life deals you out a lemon, he says, make lemonade out of it. In other words, wring out the blessings from what the Lord sends you, throw away the skin and the grind, and make something useful out of it. The Lord will not send a trial that we can't get a lesson or a blessing from. The poet said, two men looked out of prison bars. One saw dirt, one saw stars. It's making something from the trials that you have, which you feel that the Lord can approve of. Paul and Silas, with their backs still lacerated, sang hymns of praise. Passing through the valley of Baca, they made it a place of springs. Would you have done that at midnight if you had received 40 lashes, save one? Paul did. Paul was able to count it all joy. It was not joyful. It was not pleasant. But he counted it such. Again, Paul, when he was in prison in Rome later, says in Philippians 1:12, now I want you to know, brethren, that what has happened to me, this imprisonment in Rome, has actually only served to advance the spreading of the good news of the gospel. If you found yourself sitting in prison, would you look on the blessings involved in it? Says, I have an opportunity to spread the message here. Therefore, passing through the valley of Baca, he makes it a spring of water. Jesus, we are told, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and made the worst experience that could come to a man, crucifixion, into the best thing that could happen for the world, redemption. Passing through the valley of Baca, he made it a spring of water. I'd like to refer to a few examples of this in the spirit of I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day. There was a brother whom I'm sure most of you know who found himself in declining health and who felt that he was going to be losing the benefit of his lower body and his legs, and said, if he becomes paralyzed, if I become a paraplegic, I will try to be the most active paraplegic you have ever seen. His initials are Carl Hackensick. Passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. There was another brother in Chicago, I'm told, who was bedridden for 30 years, Brother Carpentier. And when the brethren would come to visit him, he would cheer them up and encourage them with all the promises. And he asked that his bed, where he lived on the first floor, would be put to the front window, and there he would speak to the people who would pass by and witness to them. Passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 4:17, our light afflictions, which are but for a moment, worketh out in us a far more exceeding and an eternal weight of glory. With all of the numerous trials and beatings and imprisonments and shipwrecks, Paul calls these light afflictions because he could count them all joy, because they were working out in him a weight of glory. Passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. Hymn 172 tells us, let sorrow do its work, send grief and pain. Sweet are thy messengers, glad their refrain, when they can sing with me, more love, O Christ, to thee. Only those who count it all joy when they fall into divers temptations can sing this hymn. Let sorrow do its work, send grief and pain. Sweet are thy messengers, glad their refrain, when they can sing with me, more love, O Christ, to thee. Passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. Now, you know, the rest of the world of Israel who were passing through this valley did not perceive of it as the place of springs. They perceived of it what it was, a very dry, waterless, thirsty land, very inhospitable. But the psalmist is telling us that these pilgrims, on their way to Jerusalem, do not look on it that way. They make of it, into a well of springs or of water. Another hymn, 106, tells us, "Blessed be the tempest, kind the storm, that drives me nearer home." It says that is God's wisdom. That is not man's wisdom. I've never heard a man in the world say, "Blessed be the tempest, kind the storm, that drives me nearer home." This is unknown to them. When things go well, they rejoice, and when they don't, they murmur, complain, and are unhappy and discouraged and in despair. It is only you and I, as we walk through this valley of Baca and count all things as unto the Lord, can make it into a spring. Remember Jesus' words. Jesus had a wonderful labeling machine. He said to his disciples that my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Is his yoke easy and light? Very difficult. It says, "Too much tribulation shall you enter the kingdom." That word "easy" is not a good translation. The better translation is, "My yoke is bearable." It's not harsh and unbearable. It is bearable. It's not pleasant, but it is bearable if we are properly motivated by it. I was talking with someone recently and sympathizing with this person in the truth because they were having quite a few trials. And the person said to me, "No, I really am not having trials." We heard that today in the testimony meeting. And I responded, "Well, either you're not having trials or you have a very fine labeling machine, that you are able to take the Lord's will from your trials and to make it a place of springs." And so it is in our daily experiences, the brethren. Have you been through the valley of Baca lately? As I look out upon the brethren, I know there are many trials and tribulations and illnesses among family, friends, brethren. When we linger in the valley of Baca, let us always remember, as a pilgrim should, that it can be changed by bringing it in the Lord's will and making it a place of springs. One more psalm, which refers to the beauty of the going to Jerusalem, this pilgrimage festival, which our entire life is, this journey. There's a hymn, an old-time hymn, you may remember it, "We're Marching to Zion." Beautiful, beautiful Zion. And that is, should be our motivation. All life's experiences are given by the Lord to let us arrive at the goal of the desired character in order to be able to have a part in this kingdom. In the 27th Psalm, we read, "One thing I have desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple." That should be our daily motivation and our thoughts. The Living Bible renders it thus: "One thing I want from the Lord, the thing I seek most of all, is the privilege of meditating in his temple, living in his presence every day of my life, delighting in his incomparable perfection and glory." How this should fill our hearts and minds all year long, not only on Thanksgiving time, of the privileges which are ours if we avail ourselves of them. But Russell comments on this verse, pages 1914 in the Watchtower: "The more desperate and determined the foes we encounter, the more fierce the conflict with the powers of darkness, the more glorious is the deliverance, and the clearer the manifestations of divine grace. And as a consequence, faith takes a deeper root, and with renewed confidence and assurance lays hold upon all the precious promises of God, and love and gratitude well up from their hearts, refreshed with an increased sense of divine favor and blessing. Such fellowship with God in adversity and in prosperity naturally tends more and more to center the heart's affections and desires in God until the one thing supremely desired and sought after is that expressed by the psalmist, to continually dwell in the house of the Lord, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple. I'd just like to close with a short verse of a poem, Upon Our Pilgrim Way. Our Father knows what things we need each step along the way. His eyes of love doth never sleep. He watches night and day. He knows sometimes, like ripening grain, we need the summer sunshine bright. Again he sends the peace that comes with shadows in the night. Sometimes he takes our eager hands and folds them on our breast. He gently lays our work aside. He knows we need to rest. Sometimes we need companionship, sometimes the wilderness. How sweet to feel he knows and gives the state that most will bless. Then let us leave it all with him, assured that come what may, our Father knows just what we need upon our pilgrim way. May the Lord help us in the days ahead to rejoice, continue our march to the heavenly city, and to be a part of the New Jerusalem, which shall soon bless the world with magnificent blessings and rehabilitations for 1,000 years. May the Lord add his blessings.